decided that tonight I'd talk about perception, because it's a very important component of the Buddha's teaching. He laid great emphasis on perception. But I made myself laugh this afternoon, because as I was thinking through this talk, thinking about perception, the thought arose, do you know, I think perception is my favourite mental formation. And I thought, oh, Paul, you are such a Buddhist nerd. Oh, and what's your second favourite? Perception is critical to how life works. As I said, the Buddha did lay great emphasis on perception. It is a fundamental part of how experience comes together and how we make sense of experience as we go along. So we can't have experience without perception. So perception is that aspect of mind which applies a label to an experience. So if there's a sound, what kind of sound is it? What does that sound belong to? If it's a, you know, smell, a taste, a touch, the mind is always looking to apply an appropriate label to help make sense of the world as we go along, yeah? So it's fundamental to the Buddha's teaching, so much so that when analysing ultimate experience, the Buddha gave perception its own category. So it's the khanda, the aggregate of perception, because it has such incredible influence on us, obviously being an ultimate building block of experience, it would. He laid great emphasis to it, so it's important that we understand it and work with it. Perception is very divisive. It separates out. It splits apart. That's its nature. So it has that quality of division about it. But it's also very malleable, and that's what I love about perception. It's so fluid and malleable and changeable. As conditions change, so the kinds of perceptions that arise change with it. And that's a wonderful, liberating thing. Also, it is possible to go beyond perception altogether in terms of one's understanding of life. So there are limits to perception, but it is possible to go beyond perception as well. We're very insecure. We need to know what's happening all the time. We are animals, after all, human animal. It's tough out there, tough world to exist in. So it's important that we're able to perceive what's going on. And if ever we can't quite perceive what's going on, we will not rest until we have found an appropriate label to add to an experience. And I think that 3 a.m. moment when you're asleep and then you wake up because you hear a sound, and the mind is immediately wanting to place an appropriate label on it. Just enough of a label to either know, one, I'm in mortal danger and I have to do something, or two, it's just the cat jumping on the dustbin lid and I can go back to sleep. But as long as we've got a label, yeah, so we can't really exist without perception. All perceptions are relative. There was a nice cartoon I saw online, which was of two people standing opposite each other with the number 6 written on the floor between them. And one person saw a 6 and the other person saw a 9. And the question was, who's got it right? And of course, they both have. It just depends on which direction you're looking. So it depends on your point of view. And the reason I decided to talk on perception was because of a recent events unfolding in the south of France. Now, we're not political here. We have no political affiliation. I have no vested interest in any of it. It's just something that's going on, and it's very interesting to look at. I'm sure most of you will know what it is, but just if you don't, the local French authorities in the south of France have banned people from wearing what's called a burkini. A burkini is a mix of a burqa and a bikini. It's to allow Muslim women who want to keep covered up to splosh about in the sea. And they're very popular. Now, just to describe it, The burkini is, so there's a headpiece. Is it an all-in-one thing? I think it's almost an all-in-one thing. So there's a headpiece, and the only parts of the body which are actually revealed are the face, the hands, and the feet, as far as I understand. Now, this has actually created quite a storm, and there are so many different points of view, and I found it very interesting from the point of view of perception. For some, it's an expression of modesty, not wishing to reveal too much flesh, not wanting to be the subject of critical observation, although it's actually brought a lot of critical observation in its wake, but that was you know, some people see it as an expression of modesty. Other people see it as a deliberate what's the word? I don't need to say it, you've said it, thank you. But given circumstances in the south of France, recent circumstances, it's quite a provocative kind of statement to be making. For other people, it's a sign of a religion oppressing women. For other people, it's a sign of an individual's devotion to a religious teaching. Now, who's right? Which way up is it a number 9 or a number 6? It all depends on your point of view. Your point of view conditions what it is that you see, and therefore how you react, and how you react reconditions the view and leads to further perceptions along those lines. So who's right? Who's wrong? This is a difficulty. Do you see how perception divides? And so that was kind of the inspiration for the talk, really. So perceptions are conditioned. They're not free. You don't perceive things freely. You perceive things according to your view structure, background, the kind of upbringing that you had, the kind of culture you belong to, the cultural norms that exist. There are a whole range of different conditioning factors, including the actions that you perform. Perceptions are resultants, what we call resultants. So we perform actions, body, speech and mind, and they produce the results. And we experience the results as sensory contacts coming in and the feelings and the perceptions that arise conditioned by those sensory contacts. So perception, in that sense, perception is not free. Walking away like this, a meditative way of Buddhist teaching, brings about spiritual maturity. And one of the aspects of spiritual maturity is that increasingly you're able to see life from many different points of view, which means that you're able to observe how it is that people perceive, why it is that people perceive things in a certain way, and recognise it's because of their conditioning. They can't help it. It's the view, kind of view structures that they hold. One thought that did cross my mind is like, how would people that object to people wearing the bikini, how would they feel about, say, if it was the religious aspect, how would they feel about observing a Catholic nun splashing, taking her shoes off and splashing around in the... And then I thought, what about a frogman? Because a frogman's got, he's got all this on, hasn't he? And he's got the whole gubbins on, plus flippers, obviously, and the oxygen tank and all that sort of stuff. But would somebody go, oh, you can't be doing that? So it's all contextualised, isn't it? How we react and how we respond. But with spiritual maturity, and the reason that you're able to see things from a whole range of different points of view is because you don't have one yourself. All views are based in speculations, hopes and fears, a desire for security, wanting to establish an identity, a concrete identity for this ho-ho concrete self that we have. I need to be able to display it somehow. So we create all these view structures and aspects of personality. We say, yep, that's me, that's enduring, that's permanent, that is what I am, that's what I stand for, and you shall know me by that. As you walk this way more and more and you start to see the reality for yourself of what life is actually like, you start to as it were, cleanse the doors of perception, and you begin to see clearly how life is constructed. You don't depend on those speculative views anymore to somehow uphold this idea of an image of the self, which you eventually reach the point you see through completely, and you see that truly for the illusion that it is. So all those view structures are no longer required, they just fall away, and you find that you're able just to see, observe the way people are tied to their views, how they like I say, they're forever trying to re-establish their sense of identity. So in that sense it's possible to transcend perception, to transcend views altogether. But I'm getting a bit ahead of myself there. Or is that the end? Oh. So following this way, you begin to discover that perceptions are not fixed. They're malleable, they're fluid. In a way, we actually know this, and people do experiment a lot with these ideas, especially in the 60s and 70s. I imagine it's still going on these days. I'm talking about the fifth precept, of course, and not keeping it. I don't know about you, but back in the day when I used to drink as a young man, it seems the more I consumed, the more I imbibed, the better looking people got. Have you ever noticed that? What is that but a change in perception due to changing conditions? It's malleable, it's changeable. I watched an interesting program on BBC iPlayer about... Well, this is another interesting thing, because I call him a young man. He could be in his 30s. And I was like, oh my God, I'm calling somebody in his 30s a young man. It's like, aren't the policemen getting young these days? No. It's just conditions have changed. You've got older, mate. I'm sorry. So yes, but he was a young man, and he was interested in how in some cultures, taking drugs is part of their spiritual practice. And so he went to somewhere in the south of America, USA, New Mexico, somewhere around there. And there was Native Americans that used peyote, which are the buttons that you get from cactus plants that are processed in a certain way, and they create this chemical that induces altered states of consciousness. So he went to see them, and the Native Americans are the only people who are allowed to use it legally, and they had to create a church to establish that it was part of their spiritual practices, you know. And so the US authorities, First Nation stuff and all that, they respected their spiritual practices. So this guy went over and he had to become a member of the church, but then he could use peyote. Sorry, I should do that. Breaking precepts. But however, the thing is, they called peyote the truth serum. So they had this ceremony, and he finally decided, yeah, he would take it. And what he discovered through taking this truth serum was that he didn't believe a word that they were saying. Which I thought was really funny. So people have used drugs as part of... I think what it is about loosening perception. You can get it through travelling. I definitely got it through travelling. You go to different cultures, you see what's the same, you see what's different. And you lose the fixity of your views, you lose the sense that you can only see things in one way. And so I understand that people would and do use chemical enhancements, but the fifth precept is saying that these things really confuse you. You can find out about how flexible, fluid, and malleable perception is without doing any of that, and you don't confuse yourself in the process. Unfortunately, you do get casualties with all that stuff. Keeping the precepts alone will change the conditions, which will start to begin to manifest in a different perception of the world around you. Keeping the precepts, you have that wonderful sense of freedom from guilty dread. So you see the world in a slightly different way because of that. You don't feel that there is fear lurking behind every corner. You don't have to run away from policemen when you see them. All that kind of... Not that you do. I'm sure you don't. Another really, really excellent way of experimenting with changing your perception of the world is to develop the parami of loving kindness. You can do that through formal seated meditation practice. And so that is deliberately changing your view of the world, your view of yourself, and your view of other people, and seeing how that then changes your perception of the world. And I always, in this regard, I always use the same analogy. It's like if you sit down and think about someone you know in a very critical and hateful way for 10 minutes every day, and then one day you see them down the street, how will you perceive them? You'll probably run the other way. You won't want to see them at all. And importantly, they won't want to see you. Because this idea that we're separate, which is what perception gives you that sense of, because you label things, as, oh, that's that over there, that's that over there, therefore they must be separate. That's not actually true. Well, you have to find out for yourself, of course. I'm not telling you what to believe. But you start to recognise that actually life is non-separate. We do pick up on one another. We do radiate our mentality through the ether, as it were. Really, life is a mind with all these kind of like individual bodies, sort of like an ocean of mind, soup of mind, and the bodies are like croutons in the soup of mind. So it's all part of the same thing. So the way you behave mentally does affect the world around you. It does change your perception of life. And remember that perception is a fundamental building block in experience. It's worth a thought. This is why I think perception is such an amazing topic of conversation. It's so wonderful to think about. So if you're changing your perception of the world, and perception is a fundamental building block of experience, you must be changing the world. Because it's not separate. Yeah, I'll leave that with you. Maybe that's too big a leap at the moment, I don't know. What happens then if you, instead of practicing hateful critical thoughts about somebody for 10 minutes every day, you think about everything that's good about them and why you enjoy their company and you wish them well? Come the day you see them walking down the street, there's a blokey, yeah, great, nice to see you. And there's warmth and there's contact and a completely different perception. Based on what? Performed actions that produce different results, certain results. Changing one's view structure led to a change in perception. Two ways. That other person perceives you differently because you practice loving thoughts. Now, we don't practice loving kindness to enforce change in other people. That's not loving kindness. We change our own view structure. So if you've got a critical streak, it's a really good practice to do. You change your own view structure, your own way of viewing the world around you, and you find through doing that that it changes your perception of people, and other people's perception of you is changed for the better too. So, as I was saying before, people are always interested in, their main concern is like propping up their self-view. And so we're always gathering together evidence as proof of our existence through the things we believe in, the things that we hold dear, the things that are important to us. And so that is conditioning the way we perceive the world around us. So when we come to sit down to meditate, this kind of creates a bit of an issue. It's something that I'm becoming more aware of as I teach. It's that our self-image doesn't always reflect reality. That sometimes we tell our things about ourselves that aren't actually true. And we do so for good reason. Like, as an example, to try and get across one. Trying to get at. Say perhaps somebody has, from an early age, decided the best way to overcome a sense of doubt or uncertainty about life is to use excessive confidence. So just to go, yeah, I know what's going on. And so they begin to tell themselves that they're a confident person. So they go through life with that excessive confidence, which sometimes gets them into trouble, but often it's, you know, it gets them ahead in life, and it means that they're more willing to try things than not, you know. So it's not a bad thing. You come to someone comes to meditation and they sit down to meditate, and the fetter of doubt is there, and it has to be dealt with. But for that person, the idea of doubt runs against their idea of who they think they are. Right? And it's not just doubt, there are a whole bunch of other mental formations, and I love them all, but perception is a really good one. The point is that people really struggle to identify, to perceive the thing that doesn't resonate with who they think they are. So there's a blind spot for people. And one of the things I found with teaching is that I'm very reluctant to tell people what it is, because they don't learn it. They are, oh, yeah, right, that's what it is. And it is like they can somehow circumnavigate that particular quality without fully acknowledging it, because that's what you've got to do with meditation. You have to fully acknowledge what's there, irrespective of whether it happens to accord with your view of yourself. So people, I've had it quite a few times where I'm not prepared to tell them what it is, and knowing full well what it is, and just waiting to find out whether they finally... And in the end, I'm kind of going, all right, time's moving on. It's one of the hindrances, and so eventually someone goes, okay, it's that. But there's a real reluctance to acknowledge it. And it's because we have these self-images, these ideas. We front up. We have this face that we show the world. And that's not congruent with meditation, because underlying it is this doubt that does need to be acknowledged and recognised and called out. So yeah, that's the quality of doubt, because that's the truth, and that's what we're interested in. So there are all these issues that come up with practicing meditation. And meditation itself, if it's true meditation, it's not about trying to get into altered states of consciousness at all. It's about learning. It's about developing your ability to perceive mind and body as it unfolds, moment by moment. And gradually, as time goes on, if you persist and you do some study, you come and chat to the teacher regularly, and you keep going with it, your ability to perceive what's going on in your experience grows and grows and deepens and deepens and develops and develops. Same as anything. If somebody has never gardened, is gardened a word?
Yes.
Okay, good. Sometimes I don't know what's coming out of my mouth. Yeah, sometimes it's good to check. So if somebody has never gardened in their life, and they walk out into our garden, they'll say, yeah, that's kind of, I'm sure that's a tree, that's some grass, some of it's green, some of it's red, you know, that's about it, isn't it? If someone's been gardening for 30 years, they'll be able to apply so many labels, so many subtle labels to what's going on, and have such an understanding of what's actually going on. And that's what we want through the meditation. We want to just have such brilliant understanding, mindful observation and noting of what's taking place in our experience. So we build up this incredible database, this understanding of what's actually taking place. So that's why it's not just about looking at the breathing and getting all calm. Nice time. It is doing the more difficult thing about being completely honest about what actually comes up, and learning to be even minded about it, and treating hatred or restlessness or anxiety with the same respect as happiness, peace, tranquility. I know that it doesn't always get a great reception, but the thing is, through learning about it, through understanding why these negative processes come up, for perceiving properly the process of condition-dependent origination, you really begin to understand. It's understanding, wisdom that we want, not just a temporary absence of the problem, but understanding which transcends the problem, that understands why these problems come into being. And as part of that process of discovery, of learning, you learn all about perception itself. You learn where in the cycle of dependent condition origination perception actually arises. Every time there is any kind of sensory contact, any kind, there is a perception that arises with it. So at this moment, there are just like thousands and thousands of perceptions firing each moment, which are just kind of, yep, you're in the shrine room, yep, that's Paul talking at the front, yep, you're in Bradford and Avon, yep, you know, you're sitting next to so-and-so, that's the shrine, there are the flowers. So it's so comprehensive, and it's working all the time. Life is not pre-formatted. Looking at it at the ultimate level, everything, the whole world is coming into being right now and is passing away right now. There is nothing that persists, nothing that endures. It's all coming into being and all passing away right now. And perception has to be there doing its job. Another example of when perception's missing in meditation is really interesting. Have you ever had any of those experiences where you start to get concentrated and it appears as though there are all these bodily distortions going on? Like, suddenly you feel like you're going up in the air. Or... Now, I shouldn't say that, because the people that haven't... Oh, when do I get to experience that? Well, deal with it. Maybe it will happen sometime, maybe it won't. It's not important. The point is, it's happened to me, and I've had experiences where I've felt like I'm just going up and up and up, like in an elevator, and down, down, down. Or sometimes it feels like I'm going round and round. There was one particular occasion where the way I perceived it was that, first of all, it felt like I was just going round and round, spinning like that, clockwise, and then I was spinning around anti-clockwise, like that. And then, best of all, I was spinning clockwise and anti-clockwise at the same moment. At which point I realised that probably nothing was actually happening. So I opened my eyes, and sure enough, nothing was happening at all. I've since discovered that as we get concentrated, the mind doesn't have an appropriate label that it can apply to the experience. It gets confused. It goes, oh, what? What's going on? I don't know what this is. I haven't experienced this before. So it applies the nearest perception it can get to. And so it starts... So the perception arises that, oh, suddenly your arms are just like miles, going out miles that way and that way. Or, you know, do you know that you suddenly become 30 foot tall? Or, and it's just the fact that the mind has to apply a perception. So it just chooses something which appears to be about right. But if ever that happens and you want to check whether indeed you are 60 foot tall, all of a sudden, just open your eyes. And you'll be so disappointed. I thought I'd broken through. And it's just a stage. And as you learn to concentrate, you find that you pass through that stage and it doesn't tend to come back. More's a pity. Okay. We do a lot of work at looking at experience in meditation as it unfolds, learning to recognize different elements, beginning to understand all the lists about ultimate reality, what mental formations are, perception, conscious, different types of consciousness that arise, and materiality and feeling and so forth. And all the time we're noting, we're observing, and you begin to recognize what we call the three characteristics of all phenomena. So irrespective of what arises, we see that all objects are transient. They're, by virtue of the fact that they're transient, they're deeply, deeply unsatisfactory. Grasping after them can give no real joy or happiness or lasting fulfillment. And we see that they're non-self. And the importance of observing these three characteristics is that they are correcting what we call the vipalasa in Pali. Hallucinations of perception. The hallucinations of perception are to see permanence in what is indeed impermanent, to see satisfactoriness in what is indeed truly unsatisfactory, and to see self in what is actually non-self. We can only crave for life to be different than it is, and therefore suffer, because we assume, we have the view, we hold the idea in mind that the objects that are apparently in our experience are imbued with the qualities of permanency, satisfactoriness, and selfhood. And these are hallucinations of perception. The more and more you meditate and you correct those hallucinations of perception with the, what we say, the right perception, perception that they're indeed transient, unsatisfactory, and non-self. And again, just to reiterate, nobody has to believe this. The evidence is is waiting to be discovered for everyone. So craving, the cause of suffering, diminishes, because you can't crave for something that you know isn't really there. So there's this wonderful alchemy that takes place, and this really, I guess, is what Aldous Huxley meant when he talked about cleaning the doors of perception. You cleanse your seeing of reality, and you go from this deluded seeing to this really clear seeing. And in that clear seeing, no matter how things appear, you see deeply, you gain insight, wisdom into the true nature of experience, and see that things you thought were there that you needed to depend upon for your happiness, for your sense of self-worth, to uphold that sense of this enduring being, you find that you no longer need to uphold those views. You no longer have to uphold that idea of separate personality. You see that it is actually inappropriate. There is just this sea of conditioned and conditioning phenomena arising and passing away. And in that is all the love, all the happiness, all the joy, the interest. And what is absent is the hate, the greed, the disillusion. And it's eventually you realise this beautiful, the beautiful reality, which is non-separateness. And the beauty of that is that you understand perception. You understand that perception is a very necessary part of the whole process, but you also understand that perception is not self. It arises due to conditions and passes away. It belongs to nobody. It's impersonal. And you come to a point where you realise that there is an understanding which is beyond that perception. And you ask, well, how can you perceive that understanding which is beyond perception? But there is a point at which words fail. There is no other, there is no second, there is just this wonderful non-separateness which is reality, and that is where the Buddha's teaching is taking practitioners, to that point of realising that there is no separation. Now, as a final thought, where there's non-separation, there cannot be division. And perception divides experience into these little bits. So the realisation of non-separateness is beyond perception for that reason. And, well, what's that like to experience that? Well, here's the thing. Nothing's changed. Other than there's no more hatred arises, no more greed arises, no more confusion arises, which is great. But life is exactly as it's always been. But here's the thing, the doors of perception have been completely cleaned, gleaming. There's no delusion in any of it. And perception is a fundamental building block of experience. So if you've come to see life as it truly is, you have actually entered into a completely new universe. It's the old universe, it's the same universe it's always been, and yet it's a completely new universe all at the same time.